Thank you, Loretta, and what a creative way to pick me. But I am so excited. I've been waiting to tell this story, and I can't wait. My chosen name being Fiametta, I have decided to honor our patron saint, the inspiration for our pandemic storytelling, Giovanni Boccaccio himself. He might laugh at being called a patron saint. As Dante had his Beatrice and Petrarch had his Laura, Boccaccio had his Fiametta, the ideal love of his youth, who inspired some of his earliest writings. So I shall be his sort of reverse Fiametta and simply tell one of his stories. Okay, we've been at the bench and pond for a while. Let's walk on. I came upon this story after I chanced upon the words to the song that's in it. Then I heard a musical setting of the words. Oh, it was incredibly lovely, full of longing and sadness. So then I had to read the story. A medieval romance, to be sure. This was a while ago, and I don't have a copy of the Decameron in the pod with me. So, and I think this might be fitting and best. I'm going to tell the story as I remember it. Okay. After he had driven the French from Sicily, King Pietro of Aragon wanted to celebrate his victory. So a great victory festival, with feasts and tourneys, was held at Palermo. There lived in Palermo at this time an apothecary named Bernardo Puccini. He was a man of great knowledge and deep sympathy, so his custom was large, and he prospered. And so he lived in a fine mansion, surrounded by beautiful gardens, with his dear wife, Giacometta, and his daughter, Lisa, a girl of rare beauty and sensitivity. It so happened that during the festival, Lisa and some of her friends were in a high gallery watching the jousting, when the king himself entered the lists. He was a tall, rangy man, as strong as two men, it was said. He was known to be a mighty and fearless warrior. He had a mane of dark hair, sharp features, clear, piercing gray eyes. Lisa saw him, and it was like she was struck by lightning. She fixed her gaze on him and felt herself trembling. The king, by some impulse, glanced up into the gallery and saw a beautiful young girl staring at him. He smiled and saluted her, then donned his helmet and went to his joust. Lisa watched the rest of the tourney in a daze, feeling as though she had a fever. And whenever the king appeared, she clung to the railing of the gallery and gazed at him. Her gaze would surely compel him, she thought. She prayed to him to glance her way again. She pored over him, his every movement and expression. She saw him. She knew him. She wanted him with her whole being. She went home that evening and had dinner with Bernardo and Giacometta, but said and ate little. Her parents expressed some concern for her. She gave them a wan smile and said it was nothing. She was tired. She'd been in the sun. She went up to her room early and asked her servant to draw her a bath. She lay in the bath for an hour, listless, thinking only of the king. That night, she writhed and twisted in her bed, her body blazed as it felt like she was struck again and again by that same first lightning strike. Images of the king moved like a fever dream before her mind's eye. She heard herself moaning, which brought her fully awake, to find herself soaked with sweat. She threw her nightdress off and went to the window, threw open the shutters, and stood there, hoping the night breezes and the moonlight would cool her and ease her. "I love him," she spoke to the moon. "Oh, my lady, forgive me. I love him." She felt the cold, pale moonlight fall on her. "I'm a ghost," she said. "I'm a ghost already." But her skin was white hot. She shivered. She was struck again. And at once she realized, "It's hopeless," she cried out. She fell to her knees and gripped the windowsill. "Of course it's hopeless," she said in a harsh whisper. "I love the king. He's the king, and I'm an apothecary's daughter. I can never be." Lisa tried for a time thereafter to live her days as usual, but her suffering mastered her. Images of the king were ever before her. Her body blazed with bright desire, and at the same time, her mind was drowned in dark despondency. She tried to will the hopeless passion out of herself. She prayed, weeping to her lady for deliverance. Nothing availed her. She grew too weak to stand. One morning, she couldn't get out of bed, and she felt that she must die. She sent for her father to come to her bedside. Bernardo had procured a succession of physicians and healers to examine his daughter, but all were thwarted by her affliction. He himself had prepared his most formidable potations for raising spirits, driving out ill humors, and even minor demons, and delivered them to his daughter, but none held any efficacy. Now he came to her bedside, feeling helpless and full of pity for her. Her lovely face was drained of color, but for two bright red fever spots on her cheeks. She had deep black circles under her eyes. "Papa," she said, "I fear I'm going to die. Will you do me a favor?" "Don't say you want a priest, please, my child," Bernardo begged, and tears sprang to his eyes. "Not yet," said Lisa with a weak smile. "I wonder if you might ask Minuccio, the minstrel, to come and see me." "Of course, my dearest child," said Bernardo, and kissed her hands. Perhaps he'll cheer her, he thought. He hurried off to find the minstrel, Minuccio being a close friend and one of his best customers. Minuccio d'Arezzo was far famed for his playing and singing, and for the beautiful melodies he made. He was, as well, a humble man, willing to give help to his friends whenever he could. When Bernardo asked him to visit Lisa, describing her condition, Minuccio took up his viol and went to her at once. Seeing how she was, he played her two or three dance tunes, which seemed to cheer her. But when he began to play and sing a love song, he saw that she winced, as if the song caused her pain. He stopped at once and asked, "What is it, dear Lisa? What's the matter? Should I call your mother and father?" "No, maestro, please," said Lisa. "I'm sorry I've come to a state where I can't help but show what I feel. You don't deserve that. But I must tell you a secret and ask a great favor of you." "Anything, my dear," said Minuccio. Lisa told him then of how she had been struck on the day of the tourney by this all-consuming passion for King Pietro. She knew that it could never be answered and that it would never leave her. She had struggled against it and it had broken her strength. She was sure she must die of it. "But before I die," she said, "I want nothing else but that the king should know of my love. I know you play for him sometimes. Will you inform him when you next see him?" Minuccio was much moved by her innocent passion and clear-minded resolve. "My dearest Lisa," he replied to her, "I am invited to play for the king again in 3 days' time. I'll inform him then. Then I'll come straight back to you and inform you of his response. So you must stay strong for at least 3 more days. Will you promise me?" "I promise you, sweet maestro," said Lisa, her dark eyes brimming with tears. Minuccio took his leave of her, went immediately to his rooms, and began making music. With her tearful dark eyes in his mind's eye, and the memory of the sound of her young voice as she spoke of her secret passion, he made a melody that he hoped was the song of her longing and rare strength. When he had finished, he played the melody to his friend, Mico de Siena, a noted poet and Minuccio's frequent collaborator. "What an unearthly, heartbreaking melody," declared Mico, as he puffed at his clay pipe. "I'd like to find words for it." "I was hoping you'd say that," said Minuccio. Then he swore Mico to secrecy and told them of Lisa's plight. "You've got 2 days," he said. Mico, inspired, wrote the verse in a day and a half. Minuccio put it to the melody. On the third day, he went to the castle and, accompanying himself on the viol, sang the song before the king. It was not long into the song that the king's hall fell silent. It was not long after that that it seemed as though no one was breathing. Minuccio sang,
"Oh, love, it won't be long before I die. Held you close and you're consuming me. Wouldn't let you loose, I wouldn't cry. as you see. My pain is fierce, but I dare only sigh. A dying prayer that one small thing might be. That he who called the lightning from above should know how I imprison you, O love.
The hall was completely silent. Then there were a few gasps, and then a great deal of applause. "Minuccio," said King Pietro, "you've outdone yourself. What caused you to make such a song?" "I will tell you, my lord," said Minuccio, "but it must be only for your ears." "Come then," said the king. "This instant, I must know." The king and the minstrel went to a small room off the hall, and Minuccio told the king of Lisa's passion and illness and resolve. "But I saw her," the king exclaimed. "I saluted her." He shook his head. "What a strange and wonderful girl," he said. "A girl like that needs to live. Go to her now and tell her we shall visit her tomorrow, before Vespers. Tell her she is forbidden to die before then." Minuccio went directly then to Lisa and told her how the song had affected the court and all that the king had said. Then he played and sang the song for her. She held her hands under her chin as if she was praying, and tears coursed down her pale cheeks. But she was smiling. "Oh, maestro, thank you," she said. "It's a perfect song. And I promise I won't die before tomorrow now," she added, laughing. Hey, Pot Piers, have you been taking things in on our way back? What we're seeing, we haven't seen before. We haven't seen these sides of the trees. We haven't seen before what we see ahead on the path. We're getting to see these things all the way around. The king and a pair of his retainers arrived at Bernardo's house just before Vespers the next day. "We have heard," said the king to Bernardo, who stood before his liege lord in some shock, "that you have an exceptional garden. We were passing and thought we might stop and ask to see it." "Of course, my lord, of course," said Bernardo. He and the king then strolled through the garden, with Giacometta peeking out at them from behind the shutters. "We understand from our mutual friend, Minuccio, that your daughter has been ill," said the king. "She has, my lord. A mysterious illness that has put us all in the greatest fear," said Bernardo. "But she has taken no worse these past 3 days, and today seems even a little improved." "May we visit her?" inquired the king. "A king's touch, in some lore, can be a healing touch." "Of course, my lord," said Bernardo. And they went up to Lisa's room, where she, expecting the visit, was sitting up a little. "It is you," said the king, striding across the room, sitting on the side of her bed and taking her hands. "The girl from the gallery! Oh, Madonna, you must rise from this sickbed. You should be sharing your beauty and passion and remarkable character with us, not languishing here. For my sake, I beg you to make a speedy and complete recovery. You are needed in the world." Lisa felt that she might have died after all. There he was, actually before her, and her hands were in his hands. Her heart rose as she really saw him. "My king," she said, "I was foolish enough to attempt something that is beyond my strength, but I think I can abide with it now, and I will do what you say." They talked for a little while longer, then the king took his leave. In the days that followed, Lisa regained the strength of her body and some of her hopes, and she found she had a new calm. There was a wound in her she knew might never altogether heal, but it would always remind her of love and of what she herself was made. King Pietro, meanwhile, consulted with his queen after telling her the whole story of Lisa's passion for him. "We must reward this charming and remarkable girl," said the queen. "Pietro, you've also been looking for a proper reward for dear Sir Petricone after his great service to you against the French. Oh, I sense a happy conjugation here."
"He saved my bacon more than once,"
said the king to his queen. My lady, you constantly remind me of why I married you. And he kissed her. One afternoon, soon thereafter, the king took the queen, with her ladies-in-waiting, Sir Petricone, and many retainers carrying all the makings of a feast, and rode to Bernardo's manse. Bernardo, again shocked, opened the gate to his king and queen. Giacometta and Lisa were summoned. The queen drew Lisa immediately into the company of herself and her ladies, lavishing on the girl all graces and friendliness. The feast was laid in the exceptional garden. The king introduced Lisa and Sir Petricone. The knight felt immediately certain that he would never live up to any bargain drawn between him and this rare girl, and also that he would never cease trying to do so. Then the king spoke to the assembled company. Our dearly cherished Lisa, it is our greatest wish to honor you and reward you for your great love, which, it is our belief, is a star we all might follow. It has been our intention to give to Sir Petricone a promising estate, as he has served us more than well and may well be the noblest knight we know. Now that he is no longer a poor knight, he may be approaching worthy of having you, Lisa, as his betrothed. If you think you see some potential in him, we can give you references. You shall have two knights then, for it is my intention to be your knight for as long as I live, and I shall take nothing more from your bright and bounteous love than a single kiss. My lord, said Lisa, I will accept all of the honors you give me because, as I decided, even in the midst of my suffering, what I want is what you want. I knew right away that my love for you was impossible. But, as I think you know, our love is not contrived or chosen by us. It is all desire and attraction. It is in our deep wounds and in the fires of our souls. What we make of it, and of the ecstasies it causes, is all. I love you, and I will always love you. This I know and pledge. It pleases me and honors me to no end that you will always be my knight. But I'll only allow you a kiss with my lady the queen's permission. There was laughter, then. The queen spread her arms and assented. The king took Lisa's head between his hands and decorously kissed her brow. There were cheers. Then there was a wedding and feasting and music and celebration. Love shone in several of its aspects for all to see for a while. And the king remained Lisa's faithful knight for as long as he lived. And whenever he engaged in feats of arms, he wore her favor. And now, our walk and our country stories are done. Back to our pandemic world, I'm afraid. But with strengthened wills and full hearts.